It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 332 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week is the return of two favorites here at Wayne's Comics Podcast. It starts out with John Santana, the creator of Jaded, a more realistic take on superheroes, which I really enjoy. He's got a Kickstarter coming this week, so be sure to go to Kickstarter and look for Jaded. It's the collected edition, number 6, which I'm breathlessly awaiting, so it's going to be good stuff. He also brings us up to date on other parts of the Santana universe, things I think you're going to enjoy. Then everything wraps up with the return of Sam Johnson, creator of Geek Girl, among other great things. He's got a brand new issue of Geek Girl out right now. And there are other good things in the Geek Girl universe, or the Sam Johnson universe, as you may want to call it, that are happening that he updates us on. I'm sure you're going to enjoy what both of them have to say, so let's get started. It's always great to talk with John Santana, the creator of such good things as Jaded and Everhounds and Wordsmith, among other good things. Of course, there's Be Jaded, which is sort of a fun take on Jaded. So how you doing, John?
I'm doing good, Wayne. How you been?
Good. It's good to talk with you. Why don't you update us on where things are? I think Jaded, I got number 5, which I really enjoyed, by the way. And I wanted to go over and talk with you as to where things stand with that, because my understanding, you've got either a Kickstarter going on now or it should be coming. How's that going?
Yeah, so our Kickstarter is going to launch next week. The goal is Friday, which I believe is the 8th. That's when we want to launch our Kickstarter.
Okay.
And that is for the collected edition for all 6 issues and 1 hardcover. I decided instead of releasing issue 6, I would hold on to it so I could... So that the fans who follow Jaded would have the opportunity to have the whole collection in one place, especially since it's been difficult to get physical copies of my book. Mm-hmm. Either have to read it on Comixology or catch me at a convention. Mm-hmm. And sometimes because I travel around, I don't travel to the same places, and some of those fans I haven't had a chance to connect again with.
Okay, all
so,
right.
So this will give me the opportunity to have the whole story in one place. Mm-hmm. And after it's kickstarted, the next step is to pitch it to other publishers. So I'll look at some other options for publishing. Mm-hmm. Before I go ahead and publish it through Iron Age.
Okay. Now, before we get too far into it, why don't you give people an explanation of what Jaded is about?
Sure. Jaded is, I like to boil it down to like Breaking Bad for superheroes. Mm. Conceptually, at least not story-wise. And that is just you have your typical everyday superheroes who are living their lives, doing their thing, and then in each one of their lives, something jarring happens in their personal lives to sort of take them far off track, and they sort of fall deeper and deeper into the rabbit hole, so to speak, and just explore a much darker option in their careers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, who are the characters in there? Why don't you talk about them?
Sure. So the unique thing about Jaded is it starts off sort of like an anthology. So even though the first issue introduces the story arc for the series, so you have the main the first character, Adam Sovereign, is coming back from a planet that he has seemingly just wiped out, destroyed. The powers that be, the federal government, is worried about what's going to happen when he comes back. So that's sort of the backdrop to the story. Mm-hmm. But the reason it's an anthology is because that issue is really just about him and how different he is in personality from when he was young and just working the streets of Metro City. And then something terrible happens in his life that changes his perspective. And then we go to the present where he's on his way back and kind of destroying things on his way back to the Earth. Mm-hmm. So then the second issue in the anthology vein is Kid Prodigy, who's like a young sort of rambunctious hero who's just come into his powers because of his genius-level IQ. He put some tech together and was able to fight some supervillains, and he gets in over his head and something terrible happens. And then he too, explores a dark path in sort of a revenge story that's there for him. Mm-hmm. So then the third issue features Grady and his father, Tempo. They're sort of like a duo, but the story really focuses on Grady because he starts off sort of as a happy-go-lucky teenager who's just come into the super team. His father is his teammate and kind of coaching him. And then, again, something terrible happens to his family. And so he has gone to extremes in order to rectify that situation. And then the fourth issue, or the last one that's anthology style, is Etheria, who's my favorite character. Etheria starts off as a young, impressionable, sort of gentle soul. Her power is that she can phase through walls. She's sort of like a ghost. She can turn invisible. Mm-hmm. And there are triggers in her life that should be good, like a marriage and a relationship with a man. But it sort of triggers this situation that she remembers from her childhood, and she decides to handle that horrible thing that happened to her in her childhood right now, and does it with some power and finality.
I remember that.
So, yeah. So then issues 5 and 6 take us back to that original concept of Adam's coming back, what do we do, while the remainder of the heroes are actually incarcerated. You realize that in issue 1. Mm-hmm. So issue 5 begins with they are still incarcerated, and they're working on how they're going to react when Adam comes back. It's sort of a mystery. We don't know whether all of them or any of them are on his side, mm-hmm. or if they just plan to do like an everyman for himself sort of mm-hmm. escape plan.
Because one,
so that's where we are.
Yeah, one of them is accused of having some kind of relationship with him.
That's true. Yeah,
and that's, so I don't want to reveal that, but there's some stuff going on. So you're right. We don't know how things are going to hit, and of course, at the cover even said he's back on it. So we have to, you know, we have to realize that. But there's another character that's involved in there too, and I think when we get to issue 6, we'll find out more about that person.
Okay. Yes.
But I think that there's a lot going on in this series. It's a lot of fun to read. Something a little different. It's a superhero genre. As I've talked with you about it, you kind of look at a more realistic take on superheroes.
Yeah, I'd like to think so. And saying that, I mean, you have to take it with a grain of salt. We're still talking about superpowers. We're still talking about, like, amazing feats of strength that no human could ever have. But I think the reason it's a realistic take, it's because, well, what would happen in real life if somebody had this level of power? And how would that affect, I think, most importantly in my story, relationships. Mm-hmm. Relationships to each of the characters individually, and then relationships amongst the characters who used to be a team. How would it affect those relationships? And I like to really focus on that.
Because Etheria is the issue that grabbed me the most, because it starts out where she's having trouble sleeping, and she keeps waking up like underground because she turns immaterial, and then when she wakes up, she's not in her bed, she's down in the ground.
Right. Which is, and at any moment, if she hadn't woken up, she may perish from lack of oxygen. So she's got to climb her way out. And it doesn't happen every night, but it happens when she has nightmares. Mm-hmm. And it's a problem for her. And I think it's a really interesting story, mm-hmm. because her husband is trying to help her in that situation. She sees it as trying to hold her back.
Yeah. Yeah, so we talked about this once before, that just because he thinks he's doing the right thing doesn't mean that she thinks he's doing the right thing.
Exactly.
Which is very relationship, the way relationships go today. And I remember sitting there watching that and thinking, but he's right. And she's, you know, then I began to realize that I wasn't looking from her perspective. I was looking from the husband's. And that gives you a very unique thing. You have to sit and think about what's going on here. That's one of the things I like about Jaded very much, is that it's a thinking book. It's one. There's lots going on, but that doesn't mean it's just a visual. It's not a video game. So when you get to actually get into the story and start to understand what's happening, you really have to think about it and examine what's going on really closely. And I like that in a book that I read. So I like Jaded a lot.
I'm glad. You know, I think when you first start the series, one of the downsides for me that I think I'm experiencing is people don't get it up front. They don't understand what's going on because I don't sort of feed it to you. I don't explain it to you up front. Mm-hmm. But I'm sort of playing the long game and taking that gamble and hoping that if you stay for the whole ride, mm-hmm. you'll see that I'm going to start referring back to those issues or those incidents, and some of the stuff is going to start tying together. Even in issue 5, you start to more begins to be revealed and unraveled in issue 5, mm-hmm. Even though not every question is answered, a lot more are answered, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This is going to be something. You talked about 5. 5 is out. You've sent paper copies to those people who supported you through Kickstarter. And, of course, I got one of those, which I really appreciated. And number 6, where does number 6 stand? Because that's the conclusion to this story. And I'm trying to see that. I'm trying to see where you're going to go with this.
It is. Where we stand now is the issue is written. The artists are working on the book right now as we speak, so that by the time the Kickstarter is done, we will be ready to ship everything to everyone, including all the rewards, no later than September. So there'll be some reward depending on what tier you purchase. Some rewards will be ready sooner. Like, let's say you choose to select issues 1 through 5. We can get those out to you sooner because those have already been completed. But issue number 6 and the hardcover itself won't be ready till September.
Do you know when the Kickstarter is going to end?
Yes, my plan is July 8th if we start on July 8th in June. And I'm pretty sure we're going to make that. We've got just about everything in play for the Kickstarter page itself. Mm-hmm. I'm just waiting on a couple of things from the artists, and we should be good to go. I'm very excited, by the way, mm-hmm. first of all, to have the whole thing collected, to finish it, to see everything come together. It's just been a whirlwind and a lot of fun.
No, you've been working on this for a couple of years, though, haven't you? I mean, this story has been in your head, and I saw you at C2E2 is where I first met you.
And yeah, so it's been a while.
Yeah, so, I mean, it must feel like crazy to realize that the end is in sight here. I mean, that all this time it's been something you've been working on and making happen and kind of hoping people would get into as we go along. But now, when you see the conclusion coming, I mean, how does that feel to have that finally, in your sights?
It feels bittersweet because I'm going to finally accomplish what I've been trying to accomplish this whole time. For 6 years I've been working on this project. Not including the time spent away deployed in Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. But it needs to come to an end, and I'm looking forward to that. And I can't wait to see it finished. I will miss the characters. As a matter of fact, I will miss them so much that I've been in discussions with another comic book writer who writes independent books, and she's going to pick up a spinoff. The writer's name is Mina Elwell. Mm-hmm. And she's done some work for Scout Comics. She did a book called Infernoct.
Really? Okay.
And that's a really cool mystery horror genre type of book. Mm-hmm. And it's another one where, and this is the reason I wanted to work with her. Mm-hmm. Her story and the way she writes doesn't hand feed the reader. Mm-hmm. It's one of those books that you have to go back and read again. And some people, like the way they like their movies, they don't want to have to take time to digest. They want it now. Mm-hmm. But the way I like to read comics and watch movies is I like to go back and say, wait a second, you just gave me an idea of what you showed me earlier in the movie or in the comic book, mm-hmm. and now I have to go back and read that again and then have a whole new experience. And that's what Infernoct is like, and that's why I decided to bring her on board for the spinoff of Jaded.
Okay. Because, wow, yeah, it's so, well, I, of course, I know some folks at Scout Comics, and I just wondered, are you going to approach them about Jaded?
Yeah, that's the plan. I'm going to submit it to a couple of companies, and they're mm-hmm. on the list.
Okay, great.
For the collected edition, yes.
Because they like to do things that have a different perspective to them, very different kinds of storytelling than, say, other companies do. Not like DC and Marvel. They want to go the standard route, but they tend not to go that route.
So I was thinking, I like their books. I definitely do.
Might be good. You probably are familiar with Stabbity Bunny because that's one that I help with.
Oh, yes. I love Stabbity Bunny.
Yeah, it's a great one. It's one of those ones. It's what they call their breakout hit of this year. And maybe if they get to your book, it might be another one of those breakout hits that'll hit. I'd love to see it.
Yeah, that'd be great. I hope so. I really do.
See, I remember we have talked before that Diamond has not been as helpful as they might be for your comic, which drives me crazy because they weren't as helpful as they could have been with Stabby Bunny, too, until it got picked up by Scout. So it'd be neat if the same, you know, end game would help both the books and make.
I think they just don't want to. They don't want to deal with yet another publisher. I think, you know, I don't really know what goes on behind the scenes. All I know is it's frustrating. And I think if they feel like, if all right, well, if you go through another publisher, then we'll take a look at it.
See, they say that they don't want to have any more superhero books because they got so many of them from DC and Marvel. But that's baloney in my mind. I think that you know, Jaded is one of those books I think that would stand out in a superhero market. So I'm really hopeful you can get it in there. I'd love to see it in Diamond someday under a known publisher. That'd be wonderful.
I it's going to happen. It's just a matter of me finding who. After Diamond turned me down in the beginning, the only company I tried is Image, and that's kind of the big shots for independent publishing.
Yep.
So I held on to it. I decided, hey, I know this is going to take me longer than is standard because I'm full-time military. So let me take my time, do it right, and then when it's collected, go back with a finished product. And that's what we're doing.
Okay, because that's a good thing. I mean, that's what happened with Stabby Bunny. I don't want to belabor the point, but the truth of the matter was is that Richard put together six issues and had a collected version and gave, and it wasn't the collective version he gave, he gave him the individual issues, but he had six issues ready. And that kind of helps because sometimes publishers want to be ahead of the game. They don't want you to be struggling to get the next book out. If you've already got them printed and ready to go, all they got to do is give them the files and they can print, which not everybody does, unfortunately. But I think I'd love to see yours out with them. I'd like, that would be a great place. Of course, there are other companies too. I mean, there's a bunch of ones. I'm sure you know what would be good fits for Jaded, and we won't talk about that here. That's something that you want to do behind the scenes to get it going. And so something happens, then you know you guys can put out a release and get it going. So I'm fascinated though. You were talking about a second series by a different creator. Are you going to be like co-creating? Are you going to look at the scripts and give her input? How's that going to work?
Well, I'm gonna provide edits to that series. So yes, I'll be involved in the story, and I'll be involved in the editing process. But she's going to take the writing chores for the Etheria spinoff. She read through Jaden and she just fell in love with the character. And even though it's my favorite character, I thought, you know, I would love to see this told from a female perspective because I love the character and I can't help being a male, you know. But I think I gave her a tough kind of backstory and I gave her a tough situation to be in. So I'd love to see what a young female writer could do with that. There's so many possibilities for that character, and I have many ideas and stories, but she does too. So I think we'll be a good team on this, and she will do all of the scripting and all of the writing chores. I'll just be editing and providing story feedback.
So you might be the Stan Lee of Iron Age Productions, maybe.
I'll take that. I'll take it, even though I write everything so far. That won't be for long. Oh, and you know, speaking of another writer, so I also have another writer. She's undiscovered. Her name is Nikki Cerullo, and she's going to be writing a backup story, an eight-page backup story that's going to be exclusive to the Kickstarter version of this hardcover only.
Wow.
So you'll only be able to get the eight-page backup, and it'll be a little bit of backstory between Sovereign and Turk.
Wow, that'll be interesting.
That'll be a nice reveal, and I was very excited when she came to me with the idea that she had. So I'm very psyched to see how that's going to look.
So you're not necessarily married to you being the creator of this stuff, because some creators, they want to be, we're the only ones that touch these characters, but it sounds like you're open to letting other people play in your sandbox.
I am, and there's a really selfish reason.
Okay.
The selfish reason is, since I can't duplicate myself and make all the stories that I could if there were more John Santanas, I want to read more Jaden stories. I want to read more than I can possibly put out. So if I hire and find some other really great talent to do it, then I get to read more Jaden stories with those characters.
Cool.
And I think part of the draw is that it wouldn't be written by me. I think that's, for me personally, that's part of the intrigue. Let's see what this person does and how they take this character. Now, I will retain, the editing capacity for every book that Iron Age puts out with Jaded. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't hire somebody without talent, and I just can't wait to see what they can do.
Okay, because it sounds interesting, because you can provide a little perspective as to, you know, how that fits into your vision or how it doesn't fit in your vision. I imagine that sometimes you'd like to see them go places that you might not necessarily want to have gone in the first place. That might be fine.
Absolutely. And I do love the characters, and I'm a little trepidatious, but mm-hmm. it's that good kind of fear. It's that kind of fear that keeps you on the edge and keeps you innovating. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important.
So how are we going to keep up with that when that starts to come out? Are you going to do it through your website? I mean, they have their own, you know, social media and stuff like that too. Are they going to be?
To be honest with you, mm-hmm. without revealing too much of my master evil plan,
okay.
Once I publish Jaded as a collected edition mm-hmm. with a publisher, mm-hmm. or if the publisher decides they're going to, you know, publish them one off, mm-hmm. it's going to be depending on the contract that we come up with. Either way. I would pitch the spinoffs to that publisher.
Okay. Okay. It may not be the same publisher.
It may or may not, okay. but with Jaden having been published and that character already been established, mm-hmm. I think I'll have a better chance publishing spinoffs of Jaden than I did to begin with.
Okay. That sounds good. And it sounds like you've got a good idea as to where to go with this, which I really like. So many times I run into great books and I just sort of fade into the ether, and I always hate to see that happen. And I would hate for that to happen with Jaded as well, because Jaded is one of those great stories that I think is would grab people who are particularly interested in superheroes. I think that'd be wonderful.
Oh, I'm glad you do. Hey, I have a question for you.
Sure.
One of the reasons I always come back to your podcast, Wayne, mm-hmm. is I really enjoy the takes that you have on the books that I write.
Okay.
Without going into spoiler territory, mm-hmm. what can you tell me about how you felt about Jaded number 5?
Number 5 is a perfect setup for the final issue. You know, you did that wonderful thing at there's things at the end that really are dynamic and have me wondering what you're going to do when things move forward. Because, you know, the characters are, you're right in that the interactions, we're not exactly sure who's allied with who. And that's kind of funny because, you know, the Justice League, everybody, you know, if they're in the Justice League, they're with each other. But in this case, I don't know that. And it's interesting to go a place I haven't been before with a team book, to not know what they're going to do when everything hits the ground finally. And I like that. I like not knowing. You know, I've been superhero books for decades, honestly. And to go somewhere where I haven't gone before, I have to tell you, it's really invigorating. I really love that. I just can't wait to see what's going to happen in number 6. I'm just dying to see it.
Well, what necessitates Jaded being a complete volume, 1 through 6, mm-hmm. is the way I built that story, and that you don't know what's going to happen mm-hmm. until the end. Mm-hmm. That would be the problem with a sequel to Jaded, because mm-hmm. all of that has now been revealed, hopefully in a way that is very satisfying to the reader. But once that happens, that how could I pull that off again without coming up with a gimmick? And I think that would be cheapening the product. Mm-hmm. So once you get that final story, mm-hmm. The only subsequent stories I think would have to be individual character based, mm-hmm. taking one character on an adventure, because recreating the mystery mm-hmm. is going to seem false from mm-hmm. here on out. Mm-hmm. Or at least that's how I feel.
Uh-huh. Well, so I have to say, yeah. the only one I know is going to survive right now based on the real world is the fact that we know there's going to be an Etheria spinoff. Of course, that might be a prequel.
But because I do time jump when comics do jump back and forth through time.
I have a better chance that Etheria is going to survive.
Okay, you can say that.
Which is good. But I love the characters. You know, I hope they don't all die. I'd rather they survive and go on to other places. But you never know. I mean, you've come up with real creative things with the characters about where they are and what they're doing and how they're going to move forward. So I don't know what you're going to do. See, like I said, I don't know. And I like not knowing. I really
can do. I ask, were you surprised at the very end?
Yes.
Good.
I was shocked. And so I am very, again, there's nothing better than surprising me. So that I'm really interested in the next issue, and that's what I felt. So I think it's going to be a really fun ride. I can't wait for number 6.
Yeah, that was one of those endings where I was pacing, waiting for the pages to come in. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't wait to see these pages. When are they coming? Hurry up. And Jomar, I think, knocked it out of the park.
Yep.
How'd you think about his pencils this time around?
Really good. I thought they were really strong.
Yeah.
They did a beautiful job of portraying, you know, there's a balance in comic artwork. It's got to have the character, like expressions and stuff like that, and also action. And I thought both of those were well done in this issue.
Yeah, and boy, does he have a strength in character expressions. Mm-hmm. I mean, he really can emote with his pencils, mm-hmm. and that's important for telling the story, I think.
See, otherwise it's a video game. I mean, if we don't care about these people, it doesn't make a difference to us. I mean, you know, I'm not a video game guy. I don't mind it once in a while, but to me, if I don't care about the characters, there's no point in reading it. So I want that.
I feel the same way.
Yeah, so I think, you know, Jada's doing a great job. I cannot wait. Number six. So any estimation as to when number six will show up?
Well, like I said, the Kickstarter will be the first time anybody can get both number six and the collected hardcover edition. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So that'll be shipping out in September of this year.
So just in time for the holidays.
Perfect just timing. In time for the holidays. Yeah. And, not foreseeing any crazy situations with family or anything getting in the way. I've already tried to make some adjustments for that. But, you know, it's possible it could get delayed a little bit. But we're already so deep into it that I don't see it happening any later than September. We should be really, really solid on that month.
Very
to
good.
Deliver.
Okay. Well, you know, if it's a little late, that's fine with me. Some things are worth the wait, and I think that Jaded is one of those things that I'll be happy to wait for, as long as it comes to us done well and something we can really hold and save, you know, for as long as we can, because I just love that book. I think it's great. So
I'm glad you do. I appreciate it.
Now, let's talk about your other stuff. You've got some other projects. Give us some updates as to how they're coming on, because Jaded, of course, takes a lot of your time. But what about, like, Everhounds?
So Everhounds, I'm ready to announce, and this will be the first time I officially put it out, and it'll be on your podcast. Hmm. But Everhounds is being picked up by Alterna.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Alterna is going to put out Everhounds in 2019. We don't have a release date yet because they want all four issues to be complete, and we are just wrapping issue two right now.
Ooh,
wow. So, but it will be put out in 2019, and as soon as I have a date that I can release, I will let you know. But I'm very excited to work with Alterna. I really love what they do, how they've brought comics back to the old style newsprint paper and feel. Mm-hmm. And I really like publisher Peter Cimetti's take on how to tackle the industry. You know, he's really doing some avant-garde stuff. I'm not sure how familiar you are with Alterna, but he's going direct to certain retailers, circumventing Diamond when he can.
Mm-hmm.
His books are in Barnes & Noble right now, mm-hmm. where in the same two Barnes & Nobles that I went to, there's Alterna books,
mm-hmm.
there's some Archie books, and there's no Marvel and DC comics on the shelf.
Wow.
And I'm not talking about I'm not talking about novels, graphic novels and hardcovers. I'm talking about the newsstand.
Right.
So it's a newsstand feel, and he's actually engaging newsstands just the way comics used to be. And I think that's such a cool idea to take things back to the roots that I'm glad to be on board.
Cool. Well, it's going to be good because they do a lot of different kinds of storytelling as well. So I think that's good. I think that Everhounds will be fun there. It'll be good to hold that. Because, you know, they were in Toys R Us until Toys R Us went under. And it's sad that happened. But they, you know, that was one way they could reach out to people. You know, I'm glad they're in Barnes & Noble's. There's got to be other stores they can get into as well.
I'm sure. Peter's a man with a plan. I trust him.
He's pretty good. Now, let's talk about your other book, Wordsmith, which I really liked. When I read an issue of that. How is Wordsmith doing?
Wordsmith is on hold until I finish Jaded. Now that I'm finished Jaded, I can go back to working on two books simultaneously, and that'll be Everhounds and Wordsmith.
Okay.
Yep. So the other issue with Wordsmith is that the artist is the colorist,
mm-hmm.
who's also the colorist on Everhounds and Jaded. So he's already doing a lot of work.
Wow.
And once we relieve him of Jaded, he can get back on full art chores for Wordsmith.
That's
Bunny Passick.
Very good. Now, that's a very different kind of story. In fact, you didn't describe Everhounds. Why don't we talk briefly about what Everhounds is and then what Wordsmith is?
Okay, cool. Well, Everhounds is the title, or the subtitle for Everhounds is Anyone, Anywhere, Anywhen. So they're intergalactic bounty hunters who travel through other dimensions to catch bounties for people. They can find anyone,
mm-hmm.
and they're willing to get them as long as they get paid in recompense. Okay. Now it goes beyond just money. The mystery will be revealed why they're doing what they're doing, and on the surface, they're bounty hunters for money, but they're actually looking for a very particular someone, and that's why they take the jobs that they take, because they feel like they're going to get closer to that someone that they're looking for.
Really cool. Is that a miniseries ongoing? How's that go?
So it has to be a miniseries, okay, because that's the deal I worked out with Alterna.
Okay.
And nowadays, everything has to start in a miniseries for independent books. It's very rare that a book gets to just go unlimited off the bat. So, yes, the first volume will be published in 4 issues, but that is a story that I have way more than 4 issues to tell. Mm-hmm. So that could potentially be an ongoing series for dozens of volumes.
Oh, cool.
If we could get it that far. I have so many stories to tell with that.
All right, Wordsmith. What about Wordsmith?
So Wordsmith is about a kid who is just the world's worst poet. He's just terrible. Mm-hmm. And he can't hold down a job. Mm-hmm. And he's got to worry about where his next meal is coming from. And then he discovers that the poetry that he writes down in his dreams, the poetry that he doesn't use because he thinks he's so smart and he thinks his poetry is better, when he does decide to use it in the right place in the right time, magic happens. Mm. Explosive, dangerous magic happens. Mm. So he begins to take note and reverse engineer a spellbook based on what he's seen and experienced from the poetry that comes specifically to him in his dreams. So he will have no oversight. He will not have a mentor. He will not have a coach. Mm-hmm. He will be a young man running rampant in New York City, trying out dangerous spells that come to him in his dreams. Mm-hmm. And a whole lot of destruction is possible. And I'm going to have a whole lot of fun writing the circumstances that he's going to get himself into. Mm-hmm.
Now, we're going to wrap up with Bejaded. The latest one I see is number 33, and it says on the website is that Kid Prodigy, Grady, Etheria, and Sovereign's dreams have come true. They're fighting alongside the Avengers.
Yes.
Talk about that.
That was so much fun to do. So are we on 34? I think we might be on 34, and you just reminded me that I may not have posted it to okay. You're right. 33. Yeah. You're right. Sorry. Mm-hmm. So in honor of my favorite just movie franchise, is Marvel movies, mm-hmm. I decided that the Jaded characters, who also happen to love Marvel movies, would find their way into a Marvel movie and experience it with the Marvel superheroes. But spoiler alert for those who haven't seen Infinity War, you know, cover your ears now, but I'm pretty sure there's not too many people listening to podcasts who haven't watched it. Mm-hmm. And this last issue of Bejaded, they're having a great time fighting alongside the Avengers, and then the end of Infinity War happens, and they are dying to get out of that movie.
Okay, I have to say, I was at a MegaCon this past weekend, and there was a guy going around. He had a T-shirt, and he had a vacuum cleaner that he was carrying around. And it said it was the Thanos cleaning crew. It said on there. It made me laugh.
Oh, that's terrible.
So, I mean, you kind of laugh. So I thought that was kind of funny. So, well, that's good. Other things that you're working on. I mean, you know, being full-time military. And thank you so much for your service, by the way. Other stuff that you're doing that we should know about.
Well, I don't know how. I think I'm crazy, but I'm also writing a novel.
Oh, wow.
It's a youth novel. Mm-hmm. I started it for my son while I was in Afghanistan, mm-hmm. Way back in 2012, 2013. And it's my passion project. I believe it's the best thing I've ever written, and I won't release that until I'm good and ready. It was really sort of a way to help my son get through the separation anxiety he was feeling for my deployment. Mm-hmm. I knew leaving that he was going through separation anxiety because all the training leading up to it, he was having a hard time in school and everything, and he was behaving completely differently, so I knew that he was having trouble. So I'd send him a chapter every month or so, whenever I can put a chapter together with whatever free time I had, mm-hmm. while I was deployed. Mm-hmm. And I just fell in love with this story, and it's simply about this kid whose dad leaves for Afghanistan, just like my son, mm-hmm. but his dad leaves him a magical family heirloom and tells him, whatever you do, protect this with your life, mm-hmm. It's got to be protected by the bloodline, but don't, under any circumstances, open the box. And of course, the kid opens the box.
Of course.
And then he goes on this magical adventure, and his goal is to get back in time for his father's return from Afghanistan so he can see his dad when he comes back and not miss any more time than he has to miss. And that was important for me emotionally and personally, because I wanted that boy to understand how much I didn't want to be away from him, just like he didn't want me to be away from him either. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to show him, hey, I'm trying to work my way back to you as well. Mm-hmm. And I understand that you can't wait for me to come back. I can't wait for it either. Mm-hmm. So that's my little story for my son.
Are you going to deploy again? Are you pretty much done with that now?
I don't know. You know, it's definitely possible. There's a unit that I just transferred out of who all of a sudden they're getting deployed. So it's very possible that they could say, hey, I know you just left Santana, but we could really use you. And, I'd have to go.
That's the trick. You just don't know. I mean, you're there to be at their beck and call, basically, what's going on.
Yeah, but, and you know what? I enjoy serving my country, you know. It hasn't all been easy. I definitely can't say that. There's been some tough times. Mm-hmm. But I've served with pride. Mm-hmm. This is 19 years now. Mm-hmm. Wow. And I feel like I've been able to make a difference in my capacity as an officer, specifically for enlisted troops, because I used to be an enlisted troop. Mm-hmm. And I like to look out for them and do my best to make sure that they're taken care of.
Wow. That's terrific. I mean, you should do a comic about that someday. That would be kind of fun.
I think once I'm away from it, mm-hmm. I'll have the better perspective.
Okay. Okay.
And I think I have to. I think, you know, before I go, I'm going to have to tell a story about my time in the service. Yeah. And strictly through allegory. I would never do anything direct. No. It would never be about, you know, a soldier in my specific situation. It'll probably be, who knows, about aliens or something. But it'll be about that.
There's still something that always intrigues me about military folks who are very creative. Because, you know, some of us who are not necessarily in the military look at it and we kind of go like, you know, because it's kind of repetitive. You know, you learn how to perform certain functions and then you do it. It's not like there's lots of creativity involved in it, at least from our perspective. But the thing that gets me is like Philip Kennedy Johnson and you, and I know several other people who are in the military or who at least have been in the military who are very creative and have lots of, like, you've got stories to tell. I just find that so fascinating and so interesting. It just makes me want to read your stories all the more.
Well, you got to think on your feet when you're in the military. You have to be creative, and whether or not you can turn that into storytelling might be a different story, but I will tell you that a lot of military leaders are forced to be creative. You've got to come up with some outside-of-the-box thinking to get out of certain situations and to make sure that you're taking care of everybody in situations where it doesn't seem like that's possible. So, the profession lends itself to creativity, just not in the way it would be expected.
I don't think. Isn't that amazing? Well, I can't wait to see how you get us out of Jaded. That's going to be really interesting to see before long, how you work out that whole situation and bring all of us with you out of that. It's going to be great fun. And the other books all sound really good to me, and I just can't wait to read them. So, you know, John, I wish you much success and much safety if you have to go back for any amount of time, but... hopefully we'll get to read your stuff and we'll get to enjoy it. Now, some of this stuff is available on Comixology, right?
That's right. Jaded, for now, is the only one that's available on Comixology. Okay. 1 through 5 starting, you just reminded me. No, tomorrow. Tomorrow. Look at that. Talk about a segue. Tomorrow at, I don't know when Comixology launches. Is it midnight? So tomorrow, Jaded number 5 will be available, and it'll be the updated version. I was able to make one more tweak to the first page, so that'll be available on Comixology, and it wasn't in print for the first print. So that first print is going to be extremely unique. It's going to have a different first page.
Now, that's the 30th. It's coming out on the 30th on Comixology.
Tomorrow.
So, yeah, well, you know, it's going to – this podcast will post on the 3rd of June. So I want to make sure people don't think it's coming out on Monday, but it's actually coming out on the 30th. Anyway, right now when you listen to this podcast, you can go to Comixology and get issues 1 through 5, and I highly recommend them, by the way. Do not miss them out. And then support the Kickstarter as well, because you're going to really enjoy – I mean, I want the hardcover – the collected version on my shelf, because this is something I want to keep. It's one of those great superhero stories you want to save. And
that Kickstarter version is going to be chock full of exclusives. It's going to have a run of Bejaded printed comic strips, which will be the first time Bejaded is in print ever. Mm-hmm. It's going to be in the back. We're going to have alternate covers. We're going to have that 8-page backup story with Dr. Turk and Adam Sovereign, mm-hmm. which is going to fill in a critical piece of backstory for Adam Sovereign. So please support the Kickstarter. Check it out at least. Any donation will help, and it'll go a long way to, you know, helping this independent comic creator continue doing what he loves.
Now, did I misspeak? Is there going to be a hardcover version you can get, or is it going to be softcover?
Hardcover.
Hardcover. Okay, so we can get a hardcover. Oh, boy. That's what I want, a hardcover for this one, so I'm looking forward to that. Well, John, you're doing wonderful stuff. I cannot wait to read more of your stuff as it goes forward. And I'm looking forward to stories that you kind of you move forward without necessarily writing every word. So I'm thinking those are going to be fun to read, too, because you're going to have inspired other writers to pick up the mantle and do stuff. So I think those are going to be great things. So, man, keep it up. I can't wait to see these good things, and much success with the Kickstarter.
Oh, thanks so much, Wayne. I appreciate your support, as always.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
It's always great to talk with Sam Johnson, the creator of Geek Girl, who has some news and new things going on. How are you doing today, Sam?
I'm all right, Wayne. How are you?
Good, good. Talk about what's going on with Geek Girl right now. It's early June when this comes out, and what's going on in the Geek Girl universe?
So, yeah, new Geek Girl 1 is out, following the events of the first mini-series, which, to recap, entailed hot popular college chick Ruby Kay landing a pair of super tech glasses that gave her super strength and super flight powers, but there's a glitch in their programming that's also messed with her head, and the initial effect of this was making her super klutzy, causing her to knock drinks over her too-cool-for-school clique when she was trying to show off her powers to them, alienating them, with the exception of Summer, her BFF, who's into the whole superhero thing, has kind of pushed Ruby away in a way to become a superhero, even to the degree of designing her costume for her. And then Ruby Kay stepped up, took on this big gun supervillain Lightning Storm, who was trashing their town, taking out points of authority, and hospitalized the big gun superheroine of the city, Neon Girl. And Ruby and Lightning Storm kind of faced off and both ended up on the floor. When we weren't quite sure whether they were alive or dead at the end of that, which mm-hmm. brings us to the new number one.
Now, is this also a miniseries? This is number one of four or something like that?
That's correct, yeah. And there's a free digital comic that kind of sets it up that you can get at geekgirlcomics.com, which is Geek Girl, Whatever Happened to Ruby Kay.
Okay, which is good. And, of course, as we start out the new miniseries, we've got the name of the book is called There's a New Geek in Town. And
yes.
We probably need to talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, I think we're hopefully past the point where we need to be careful of spoilers now. When the free digital comic came out, I had to be very careful about what I was saying, but if you don't want any spoilers from that are revealed in that, I would stop listening now, get that, read it, and then come back. Because what's happening, which is what gets revealed at the end of the free digital comic, is Ruby is in a coma, and Summer, the aforementioned Summer, her best friend, has stepped up, has taken on the glasses. And as we enter the new Geek Girl 1, she's zooming in on, flying down towards a mugger who's running off with a purse. And like Ruby, that she experiences teething problems with these powers. When she tries to fly down and knock him into a wall, she smashes him through the window of a hardware store, causing expensive damage that she can't afford to pay.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of interesting because it's a real change to have her in the costume, isn't it, as opposed to Ruby Kay? I mean, isn't that something different?
Yeah. And as I say, when the free digital comic initially came out, I was having to talk around that because hopefully it's not something people saw coming. Just to be clear, though, this is not Summer. James is not now permanently Geek Girl. This is Summer. As her intention is to fill in for Ruby. She feels kind of responsible for, you know, her getting, well, put in a coma. And she's just there to sort of hold the fort and just take care of business while Ruby's out of action is her intention. But whereas Ruby had a kind of a baptism of fire and learned hard and fast and got good at this whole superhero thing, Summer is somewhat more ropey at it, as indicated by the being of the issue that I mentioned, and then she gets tangled with this guy, the Cad, whose power is to mess with girls' heads, and that don't go too well either.
I'm really fascinated because she's the one that likes superhero stuff, and yet as you talk about it, we get a sense that she's not as good at it as Ruby Kay is.
No, I mean, you know, it's one thing to like superheroes, but that doesn't necessarily mean you should dress up as Batman and go out fighting crime. Summer is quite athletic and so forth. But the other thing is, though, as Ruby experienced, getting a handle on the glasses have this chip that goes into the affects the brain, and that's how the powers work. But also there's this glitch in them, so Summer is finding it quite difficult to sort of manage the powers. It's not quite it's a little different from, like, you know, your Superman. There's things going on that the user of the glasses is not necessarily entirely aware of, and you may notice as well, those of us that are familiar from Summer in the first miniseries, she seems to be acting differently while she's wearing these glasses.
Interesting, because in the first issue we get to see her, and of course she's interacting with Pitbull.
Yes, Pitbull, the jock superhero, has taken her under his wing. And the intention is that, you know, he'll train her up and then they'll be able to go and fight crime separately, because crime is quite undermanned where they live in Maine at the moment, after the damage that Lightning Storm has done, including taking out two police stations. So that's the intention, but it does seem like she's not such a natural fit as what Ruby Kay was.
So funny, because, you know, you would think that somebody who likes that kind of life and that kind of thing going on would be better at it because they understand more what's going on. But it's just so interesting that that's not the case with her. I find that just fascinating.
Yeah, it is an interesting thing. I think, you know, she is really lovable in the role. She really wants to, you know, she's doing this to help Ruby out, and she really wants to do it. And I think people will really warm to her in the role. But she is having a tough time, and it's not going to get easier from her after issue one. There's a thing coming in issue two where she's really, really going to be up against it.
And I still think that somebody who at least likes it and probably has read comics and understands what villains do and things like that might be easier for her. But to find out that it's not, that's something I didn't expect.
Yeah, well, you know, maybe there's a lesson there for fanboys. Maybe you shouldn't go out fighting crime, because you might get your ass handed to you.
Because some people do that. You know, I keep reading stories like it's a Kick-Ass kind of thing. People put a costume on and they go out and they start to battle evil, supposedly, and, you know, they end up in hospitals and stuff, just like Ruby Kay did. And you're basically saying to people, maybe you ought to rethink it before you go out and get a costume and start to go out and try to fight people?
Well, just, I mean, the fact is, if you put a costume on, that doesn't suddenly make you indestructible. As I say, dressing up as Batman is a good example, because, you know, Batman is not Superman, he's not super-powered, but Batman is Batman. You putting on a Batman costume does not make you Batman. As we witnessed in that Batman film where George Clooney put on a Batman costume and was just George Clooney in a Batman costume.
Okay. Because I keep reading stories about that, and it just baffles me how people want to go out there and take on criminals who might have guns and things like that. I mean, how do you possibly think you're going to startle them or something like that, or get some sort of shock?
I mean, you're fantasizing, you know. I mean, that's what it is. It's fantasy, and I think the psychology of it is, if you dress up as a superhero, you're a superhero. Whereas if they were to just as themselves, as an ordinary person, go and put themselves in that situation, I don't imagine that they would expect to fare well.
Mm-hmm. That's what Batman did when he first. If you watch, there was a Batman the Animated Series movie in which he just put on a mask or like a hood, and then he went out and tried to fight crime, and they just didn't care. They came and kept coming at him. It's when he put on the costume that it kind of scared the villains.
Yeah. So, but again, you know, that's Batman. That's right. Batman.
I'm Batman. Yeah.
Exactly.
Now, let's talk.
All I've got to do is say that.
Yeah, let's talk about Ruby Kay, because we see her, although we don't, you know, she doesn't really interact in what's going on. She's in the hospital room, and her friends come to visit her. And talk about that. I mean, that's kind of interesting, because, you know, when she sort of got clumsy and kind of put some of them against her, it seemed like, now that she's actually saved the city, they like her now?
Yeah, well, this is, I mean, the high concept of Geek Girl is Mean Girls meets superheroes. And yes, when Ruby originally got these glasses that gave her these powers, and she was trying to show them off to her friends, it just alienated them. They weren't buying the whole powers thing. And whenever she tried to demonstrate it, she just kind of made a fool of herself. So the thing with the Ruby Kay Geek Girl thing is, she was this hot, popular college girl, and she became kind of uncool in the eyes of her clique as Geek Girl. However, now she's saved the frickin' city from Lightning Storm, and that was, you know, it's been on TV. People know that Ruby Kay is Geek Girl. She's now, you know, pretty cool. So these girls, they like to be part of what's popular. Mm-hmm. So we find them at her side, talking to her while she's in a coma, and Stacy, who's the one that kind of was involved in getting Ruby Kay the glasses in the first place on a drunken whim when Ruby decided she wanted them, Trevor Goldstein, the college brainiac who had invented them, him and his mate Jeff were drunk, and they kind of took advantage of them and got them more drunk and got them to play a game of strip poker where the glasses were at stake, which is how Ruby landed them. So Stacy is having previously distanced herself, is kind of trying to remind Ruby of you know, she was a part of the origin of Geek Girl. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, they're kind of trying to get back in with her. But still, all the time being basic bitches, can't help one of them making a joke about Ruby being like a vegetable.
Yeah.
So, yeah, not the nicest people. Mm-hmm. And but then we also get to see Mariella, who was the waitress, mm-hmm. That Trevor Goldstein was actually created the glasses to try and become a superhero in order to try and impress her. She's become friends with Ruby due to Ruby getting involved with a problem she had in the first miniseries. And she comes to the hospital to visit her, and the Ruby's clique make her feel about as welcome as a bucket of sick.
Why is that? I mean, why are they treating you? Is it because they want to, like, own her in that sense, that she's their friend and not this other girl's?
Yeah, that's part of it. They look down their nose at her. They're privileged college chicks. She's having to, she's a waitress, and their daddy wouldn't, have them waiting tables. So there's that thing. And there's also that, they're her friends from some time ago, apart from the little glitch where they hated her. Mm-hmm. Well, not hated her, but, distanced herself from her. And so... Mariella's only just recently come on the scene, so they're looking at Ruby as kind of in some ways a valuable commodity that they've earned the right to have in their lives, whereas Mariella has known her for a very short time, so they don't think she deserves to be part of that scene.
And poor old Ruby Kay has nothing to say about this.
It's a bit tricky for Ruby while she's in a coma.
You'd think that they would be kind of all, well, if you're a superhero, you don't really own them. But of course, they don't understand that. They don't get that. She's something that they hope to make them even more popular. So they're gonna try to make sure that nobody else muscles in on that.
Yeah. Absolutely, and we'll see as well that the kind of arch bitch of the clique, who really was quite mean to Ruby when she kind of made a fool of herself with the powers, she's not at the hospital, so we've yet to see where she stands on it.
Of course, if she's not there, that kind of gives us some indication as to how she feels.
It gives us potentially some indication, but
we've got to read.
Very kind of thinks she's better than everyone. Mm-hmm. So whereas the others may sort of feel the need to sort of be there, maybe she thinks she doesn't need to. She's Karen Carpenter, who is just great, and why wouldn't you want to be friends with her?
So she's competition now. Ruby Kay is for this girl.
Well, as I say, it's yet to be seen, because Karen doesn't factor into the first issue. It's yet to be seen where things stand with her. But there's definitely going to be a thing running through this series where the girls are really looking to turn around things with Ruby having been so horrible to her.
I always like the way that you portray these characters as very alive, like as if you know these people. You didn't base these people on anybody that you knew, did you? Are these from your imagination? How'd you do it?
Thankfully, in terms of Ruby's clique, thankfully not based on anyone I know. No, it's kind of, I sort of came up with the high concept of Ruby and that, the type of girls she's friends with and not the type of people that I associate with. As I say, thankfully it's all from my imagination. But then Summer is like, her look is based on a friend of mine's, and she has the same sort of morals as my friend Chris. And so there's an element of the real world getting in there. But in terms of the nasty girls, thankfully not.
Because what does Chris think about her, the character that resembles her?
Oh yeah, she loves it. I mean, how it happened, I met Chris online through, I was just like searching for sort of a look for Summer, and her look fit. So though Summer's a lot younger than Chris, it's the look is based on her, and she loves it. She has it like as a profile picture. She loves it.
Speaking of Summer, well, there's an interesting sequence where Pitbull is talking with her, and he poses an idea that she hasn't considered, that maybe Ruby Kay will not come out of the coma. And boy, does that stun her. Talk about that, because you were saying the fact that she considers this to be a temporary thing, and when she's confronted with the possibility that she may have to do this for some time, that's quite a startle thing.
Yeah. I mean, the thing with Summer is as we kind of talked about earlier with the whole, she's into superheroes, ergo she should be a good superhero. She's kind of in a... She's not in a fantasy world as such, but it's, if you think about, her dad's a big comic geek. She's got, like, in her college dorm, she's got all superhero posters and stuff. Mm-hmm. So she's quite entrenched in that sort of lore. So if you think about that kind of lore, you know, no one dies. People, even if they do die, they quote unquote get better. So it's not even occurred to her that Ruby could, you know, maybe not get better. So it's quite a sledgehammer when Pitbull suggests that to her.
Pretty amazing. Yeah. And she goes back and talks to the waitress a little bit at some point about it too. You know, by the fact that she keeps saying, "Yeah, I'm sure she'll be fine. I'm sure," but you're not convinced as a reader that she still feels that way.
No, I mean, I like to keep things unpredictable with the series. So yes, we'll see how all that unfolds. But as I say, whatever happens, Summer ain't gonna be permanent geek girl, but I think the readers will hopefully, as I say, really enjoy her in that role. She's very lovable in it.
Oh heavens! I was just thinking, what if one of the other girls gets a hold of the glasses?
Well, something that had occurred to me, which I haven't decided whether or not to do anything with yet, is Karin, the dreadful human being, getting hold of them. It could be quite interesting for her to get hold of them, because there's a vulnerability here, as you know, as people have pointed out. You know, what if, you know, because, you know, as Ruby ends up in the end of the first miniseries, she's knocked out. She actually loses the glasses, are knocked off her during the fight with Lightning Storm, which is partly what makes her vulnerable, because she at that point loses her super strength, and Lightning Storm's powers electrocute her. So it's, yeah, unless she was to get them like welded to her head or something, it's quite a, you know, it's quite a vulnerable toy she's got there.
Wow, that's, I shudder to think about that girl with the glasses, to be honest.
Yeah, I do. It's I mean, something I want to do with Karin is get into, this is something I hope to do in the third series, is get into seeing why she is, because anyone that's read any first series, you know, she's quite a nasty piece of work, but there are reasons for that. And I'm interested in exploring all the characters in the Geek Girl universe, which is something that I've been able to do to some degree in this new first issue, because with Ruby being out of commission, it's been fun to do it. I mean, I'm proud of the sort of world I've created there, and that we can have, you know, an issue that I'm really pleased with, and that holds up, you know, even though the titular character is unconscious.
Well, it's good the story keeps going on whether she's involved or not. It's like real life.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is the thing that we haven't really hit on yet, is the dearth in law enforcement as a result of Lightning Storm is leading to a lot of crime going on, such as we start the issue, this mugger that Summer's chasing, and things escalate because we've got this bunch of supervillains, the League of Larcenists, have come onto the scene to kind of capitalize on the hole in law enforcement. So these guys have got like super tech, they've got blasters, they've got portals, and they're looking to grow in number and become the Legion of Larcenists. And, you know, Pighead, the guy with a half a human brain sewed to a half a pig's brain, so he's got half a pig's head as well as an effect. He's really looking to become the next big thing with him and his League of Larcenists, and they're recruiting, and they want to be big. And he, as he says, Maine ain't gonna know. Well, if things go the way he intends, at least Maine ain't gonna know what's hit it.
He still is unsettling to me. He's drawn very well by the artists. And
yeah, absolutely.
You've got half head. On one side is a pig head, and on the other side is the human head. Now, fortunately, his mouth is completely available, so he's able to speak. But, God, when I look at that, I just find that really creepy, unsettling. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, you've done a good job in creating a villain that I think is going to be somebody I can't forget.
Yeah, and there's a good dynamic going on with the League of Larcenists, because they've kind of all got their own motivations, and the Terry who joins up well, we see him come into it towards the end of the first issue. He's kind of like, he's not such a bad guy, but he's on hard times. He's trying to support his wife and kid. And he's kind of half in, half out with the whole thing. And Pighead wants everyone to be all in. So this causes some friction.
It's just gruesome to look at. You know, the way that he drew it is just particularly amazing. So
he really, really hit it there, Carlos.
And who's the artist on the book, by the way?
Carlos Granda.
Yeah. Boy, I'll tell you, he's got a hood on for part of it. And when he pulls the hood off, I remember sitting going like, ugh, what's that?
Yeah, and it's, again, with it, he speaks in a really sort of dark way as well, because like because of the pig brain has affected the way he speaks. So he's kind of a nasty piece of work. And as I say, Terry is kind of gets off on the wrong foot with him, and it's pretty hard to come back from that.
So that's the first issue, Geek Girl number one. How do people get a hold of Geek Girl number one right now?
So geekgirlcomics.com, and you can get it at Comixology. Those are going to be your main places. Indie Planet has it. But geekgirlcomics.com is the best place to go. And also that links to the first series, the collection. Volume 1, Lightning Strikes, is still available at Amazon. So, that's a good place to go. And as I say as well, if you go there and join the mailing list, you'll get the free digital comic, Ruby K, Whatever Happened to Ruby K. And that kind of bring, if you were looking to jump on board the series with Volume 2, that really brings you right up to speed.
Okay. So speaking of Volume 2, the second book in the series, how far is that along? Because obviously you've got the first one done, which is great, and people are going to get to enjoy that. When can people look forward to issue number 2?
What we're doing, because sort of financially, it would put too much of a financial strain on me too, because I'm like paying the artist, and it would put too much of a financial strain on me to put it out monthly. So we're going sort of... the gap between the first issue and the second. So the first issue's out now. The second one comes out July the 11th. So it's not a bad gap. And what I'm going to be doing with each issue is in the back page, it'll say this is the date that the next one's out, and that won't change because I don't want to, I really don't want to be anything to do with the old sort of waiting 6 months syndrome. It's not that far from a month between the first and the second, and when you get the second, it'll tell you when the next one's out. Second issue, all the artwork's done, so we're way ahead of schedule. We're good, and Carlos has got the time to work on it, and all the scripts for all four issues are done. So. Wow. Yeah, and I'm really, really pleased with them as well. And we've got a thing coming, we had how things ended up in the first miniseries there was quite a few cliffhangers in it, and we've got a moment coming that I think will be quite jaw-dropping for the audience, hopefully.
Great. So that'll be good. Are you going to Kickstarter, by the way? Because you're talking about money and stuff like that, because that's how indie creators often pay for stuff they're doing. Are you going to do a Kickstarter maybe for number 2?
What I want to do is like I did with the first one, where I use the Kickstarter primarily to get like pre-orders on the collection, because the Marcosi, the publisher, I'm going to be ordering however many copies myself. And what I decided was a good idea last time round was, rather than just pulling out a number of the air, getting pre-orders. So on the Kickstarter, you were able to get all the first issues, the first miniseries is individual issues, limited variants and all that. But yeah, that's the way I'm going to be doing that. So that's not going to be until like next year. So, okay. I want Kickstarter, I want it to be coming out regularly. I don't want big gaps, and I don't think it's de rigueur to sort of go on Kickstarter every month to fund a single issue. It's not certainly not how I want to do things. But it was great. The first Kickstarter it was a good experience and it did well. So I certainly will do that for the second collection. But that won't be till whenever in 2019. After all four issues will have already been out.
Maybe one of the best ways to support you is to buy the book, because that gives you money too.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, these things aren't cheap to produce, but we're getting it done. And I couldn't, you know, we've got the same artist, we've got the same colorist of the first series, Paul McLaren, who is the main letter on the first series. The whole team's back on board, and it, you know, you can see everyone's into it, and I'm really pleased with it.
Mm-hmm. It's turned out really great. I mean, I really enjoyed the first miniseries. I also enjoyed the Free Comic Book Days type book, and the first book really blew me away too. You've got a lot of real surprises in there. So if people haven't been reading Geek Girl, this might be the best time to jump on board. And you got a little to catch up on, but not too terribly much. And then you can start to read the series as it comes out. And I guess the same thing is true. We'll always be able to go to the website or maybe Comixology to get them. From the future.
But but I mean, this is the new series is designed as a good jump on, because we have got summer as the stand-in new Geek Girl. So when you're seeing Summer in the Geek Girl costume, that is the first time she's been in the Geek Girl costume, as far as we're concerned. You're not missed anything. You're right in there with her, and it's going to be fun.
All right, because it's really great, and you know, I highly recommend it. Geek Girl is one of those great books that you get to know the characters and you care what's going to happen to them, and it's a very nicely fast-paced story, so you won't be able to get away from it. I think once you start to read, you're going to want to follow these characters and find out what happens to them, which is really great. Which brings me to your other projects, because you've got other projects that you've been working on as long as I've known you. Do you want to update us on your other projects?
So The Almighties, which is the comedy superhero team co-created with me and between myself and Mike Gagneau, which is a kind of initially started as like a Avengers parodying kind of thing. It's very quirky. I associate it with Family Guy as a type of humor. So we've had two issues of that. We've had a zero and we've had a one. And the third one is in the works, which is the DC name parodying Almighties After Birth. That's coming on, but it's everyone involved is doing other things, but it's coming on. That'll happen, and I'm pleased with it. It's good. There's that, and then there's Cabaruccino Voodoo Junkie Hitwoman, who so far has appeared just in Halloween anthology issues of HM Comics FX. Now, she appeared regularly in that while that was running. It's no longer going, but she had four appearances in that, all in Halloween issues. So the intention was to follow that with a miniseries, which we have got most of done. Mm-hmm. But I've decided I want to bring her into the Geek Girl universe in the third series. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of putting the mini series on hold so that she can be introduced there first, and then the intention will be to have the mini series coming out at the same sort of time as the third Geek Girl series when people have been introduced to her. And she's a really exciting character. She's a bit crazy, edgy. She's an ex crack whore who's become a supernatural gun for hire. You can still get, there's a thing that has some preview pages for the miniseries and has a self-contained Carver story, which in fact features Geek Girl villain Mr. Mashup. So there's already some sort of crossover. That's Cabaruccino Voodoo Junkie Hitwoman Dark New Year, which I think you can get on Drive Through Comics. And so that's, if you want to get an introduction to her, that's the place to go, because I've got a big plan for her in the Geek Girl universe.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what about teaming up the Almighties with Cabaruccino and Geek Girl?
Well, the thing with that is the Almighties it's a very different feel. Mm-hmm. It's much more comical. So I don't know. It's not occurred to me a sort of natural crossover there. However, there is a character in the Almighties that I am interested in potentially bringing to the third series of Geek Girl, but it would be done in a different style, much as, again, with the sort of crossover element, Whiteout, who was the crazy neo-Nazi that was in the first Almighty's book. He features in the Cabra Mini, but whereas in the Almighty's, he was, you know, kind of a joke. He's things are a lot darker and more serious with him in the Cabra. So yeah, the Almighty's is a different book, but you know, I'm interested. Part of what I love about comics is having that ability to cross things over. So if you know, if the right vehicle was the idea for the right vehicle was to strike me, then I certainly wouldn't rule it out. I mean, I, you know, I really enjoy working on the Almighty's, and there's a free thing of that as well. In fact, if you go to, that might be at Drive-Thru Comics, but certainly if you go to my blog, which should come up easily if you Google Sam Johnson Comics, there's Almighty's Origins, which is a free digital comic, so you can check that one out as well.
Very good, very good. Now, I got to ask you, of course, you're a big Deadpool fan, and you want to write Deadpool at some point, if that should ever happen.
Mm-hmm.
Deadpool number 2, the movie is out, and I'm sure you've seen it by now. Why don't you tell us what you thought of the film?
I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, because, I can't believe
it. Yeah, because I've got a bit of a backlog, because Avengers Infinity War, I'd arranged to see with two friends, and one was away, and now the other's away. So that's the priority. I want to see that first before Deadpool. And also, it's another thing where I've arranged it with friends, and it's not the most easiest things to coordinate. But that's okay. I mean, I'm gonna, you know, savor that movie, so I'm not in any sort of rush to get it over and done with. I'm hearing very good things. I'm really, really looking forward to it. But yeah, I mean, there's that, and then the Han Solo as well, so it's some really great looking films coming out at the moment, but I've got them in a kind of backed up thing at the moment with Infinity War as the first on the list.
Well, see, I haven't,
but also just to mention Deadpool though, sorry,
okay.
That's things, interesting things going on with that as well, because that's relaunching with a new number one with Scotty Young writing and taking it back to the Merc with a Mouth roots, as in going back to the mercenary business. So I'm interested to see what happens there as well.
Which leads to a quick question: is how do you feel about the new number ones that Marvel's putting out? I mean, including Deadpool. Do you think that they're making the smart moves at putting the different characters like Dan Slott on FF and the new writer on Deadpool? Do you look forward to that as a Marvel fan?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, FF, I think they've left it the right amount of time. I've really been enjoying the Marvel 2-in-1 book that's obviously going to be setting the FF up. I liked a lot of Dan Slott's stuff on Spidey, and I think he'd be a good fit for that. So I'm really interested to see that. And yeah, Deadpool, you know, things have been very good and dark and interesting in the previous run, but it'll be kind of fun to get back to sort of basics a bit. So yeah, in terms of those absolutely all good. The Thor relaunch, I'm not keen on the artwork, but Jason Aaron is great. I mean, I'm really enjoying, well, he's finished the Star Wars books now, but I'm behind because of the trades. Yeah, I think it's good things. The only criticism, if I'm not really criticizing, but you know, Marvel's thing was like they went to Marvel Legacy, where they went back to the original numbering, and there hasn't been much of a gap between that and, oh, let's do them all back at number one again. Mm-hmm. Well, they're not doing them all back at number one, but I presume that's an editorial decision with the editor-in-chiefs having recently changed.
Mm-hmm. So I'm interested how many issues in a run we can take anymore, because it used to be, you know, like this action just hit 1,000. And I think that's going to be super rare. I don't think books get past 50 very much anymore before they get renumbered. What's your feeling about that? Do you think that's good for comics? Because it certainly gets the collectors back in.
It makes them accessible, I think, is the main thing. I mean, with Geek Girl, the, you know, it's so far it's two mini series, so it made sense for me to go back to a number one with the second, rather than it being issue five, which comes out, you know, however much time after the first. But also because it is something new with Summer in the costume, so I don't have a problem with number ones. But I would say, you know, it's good to have a proper justification for it. I think Marvel at some point did go a bit nuts with it, where there was like two Squirrel Girl number ones in the space of a year, I think. So, yeah, but I don't think it makes a great deal of difference. I mean, they're not rebooting, and that's key. You know, the continuity remains.
Mm-hmm. Very good, very good. Well, you know, as a big Marvel fan, I know you are. You know, if you're all for, I think that's a great sign for Marvel as things go forward. And I hope that someday that Marvel actually gives you a chance to at least do a Deadpool one-shot someplace and show them what you'd like to do with the character. I'd love to see that.
Yeah. I mean, part of the thing why I previously was a lot more sort of focused on that was I felt like the kind of stuff that, like, recently with all the press there's been about Deadpool 2, Joe Kelly and Ed McGuinness have been cited as kind of the secondary creators of Deadpool, in that they brought so much to the character. And really, a lot of what we see in the character in the movie is down to what they, you know, developed. So what I'm saying is, when I was really hell-bent on writing Deadpool, it was because I wasn't sort of seeing the Deadpool I knew and loved. But that changed with Jerry Duggan and Brian Posehn. What they brought to it was really good and gave it the depth. And I'm interested to see what Scotty Young does with it now. Mm-hmm. So there's two things going on with that. Number one, it's like I realized at that time I wasn't at the level where I was a realistic proposition to be considered. But I'd say part of my motivation was I wanted to do it because I wasn't getting the Deadpool I knew and loved. But also, I've now, you know, I've got much more into further along with Geek Girl, and I'm very involved in that. So I'm loving what I'm doing. So yeah, I absolutely would like to write Deadpool at some point, but I am perfectly happy doing Geek Girl.
Well, I hope Marvel realizes that you have a good story, at least one good story to tell that you could.
Oh yeah, I certainly have ideas for them with a mouth.
Mm-hmm. It'd be great. Of course, you developed the character that's somewhat resembles Deadpool, if I remember correctly.
Well, we've got the Deadpool parodying Wayne Winston in The Almighties, who I think features in the Almighties origin, which I mentioned. And yeah, he's going to play a bigger role in the one that's in the works. And the thing with that is, you know, the character, what's interesting about it is the character Deadpool was already a kind of a parody. Mm-hmm. So where do you go with this? And the answer is we start by going like way, way over the top, and then completely flip it where for reasons that I won't give away until whenever Almighty is on the horizon, we get a kind of a merc without any mouth, because he's been kind of the boss of the Almighty's, Joe Cyborg, who takes over them after the Almighty's origins, has kind of duped Wayne into believing that it's very important that he's quiet in when they're in battle situations, so that he can give it his full focus rather than being distracted and thinking about jokes. But the real reason that Joe Cyborg is telling him to do that is because Joe Cyborg finds him really annoying. So we kind of subvert the whole Deadpool thing with that.
Cool.
And that's going to be fun as well. I mean, everything we've got going on in the new Almighties is fun. But yeah, the thing with that, as I say, I everyone involved is doing other things. Two of the people involved are teaching, so it's a difficult one to get done. But we're a good way through it, and it'll happen.
Great. Well, you're doing a great job with it. If people want to follow you and keep up with your projects, how do they do that?
Well, as I say, if you Google Sam Johnson Comics, that's a good one to get onto my blog. GeekGirlComics.com should link you to various places. And Twitter, I'm DASSamJohnson, DASamJohnson. Should be pretty easy to find on Facebook. If you've got friends that are into comics, it's not unlikely I've got them in my mutual friends. So I just think I'm fairly easy to hunt down.
Very cool. Well, Sam, keep it up, and this is wonderful stuff. I highly recommend people at least get in there and give it a good try, because it's definitely something that I enjoy, and I've been reading for a couple of years now, and I just really enjoy all the stuff that you do. You always surprise me, and you always have characters that I really like, and I think those are two big, important things to accomplish. So you're doing a wonderful job, Sam. I hope you keep it up.
Thank you very much, Wayne.
And that's it for this week. Be back next time when you'll hear another great interview with another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.